This audio message is a production of The Fields Church, located in Mattoon, Illinois. We're a church community that wants to help you follow Jesus Christ, connect to caring people, and passionately serve others. Visit us online at thefieldslive.com.
Great to be with you guys today. My name's Evan Courtney, one of the pastors here, and we are continuing our series called Game Changers. And so it talks about what we've been talking about is in sports, there's usually a moment that happens either for the losing team or the winning team that shifts the outcome of a game, and that's called the game-changing moment, or hey, that was a game changer. And so we're going to continue for the next couple weeks, dive into what this looks like. And so in my own life, me and my family are big basketball fans. We like basketball, college basketball, not NBA. That's not really basketball, right? That's just, I'm not sure what that is. You have to pass the ball for it to be basketball, and that's not basketball. And so we're big basketball fans, and we've always been growing up, even when I was younger. Basketball, we played basketball, watched basketball, talked about basketball. Now with our kids, we watch basketball, play basketball, talk about basketball. Except for our three-year-old, she hates basketball. She always boos, boo, unless there's a cheerleader pops up onto the TV, and then she's like, hey, it's the cheerleader. But that's our life a little bit in our family room where kind of we hang out. There's three basketball hoops inside of the family room. They're all indoor, but there's three inside, and then there's one outside. And this last week when I came home, one day, my son had the chalk out, and he was making the lines for the basketball court out in chalk. And so that's kind of who we are. And I remember growing up as a kid, I grew up in a really, really small town, and they did not have organized basketball until about fifth or sixth grade. And so I signed up for organized basketball. And I remember this in particularly, when I was in sixth grade, they had a sixth grade A team and a sixth grade B team. And the sixth grade A team were those that were really good, and the sixth grade B team were those that weren't really good. And so I was on the sixth grade B team, right? Either you were thinking A team, I was on the B team. I was the youngest boy in our class, and so I was the youngest, I was the smallest, I was the weakest, I was the shortest, and so those aren't good makeups. If you know anything about basketball, those are not good makeups for a basketball player, being the shortest, the smallest, the skinniest, the weakest. There's no money in basketball for you, okay? So I was on the B team, and I only remember one game, but I remember it was the B game, so I was starting and playing in the B game, and within the first 5 seconds of this game, now, like, even though I was small and weak, and I was the youngest, like, I had this energy, and so I remember within the first 5 seconds, I got a foul called on me. First 5 seconds. Next 10 seconds, I got my second foul called on me. 10 seconds later, I got my third foul, and within 90 seconds, I had my fourth foul on me. Now, if you know anything about basketball at this age, if you get five fouls, you're eliminated out of the game. And there's four quarters in the game. In that first quarter, and within 90 seconds, I had four fouls. And my mom tells the story of the head coach sitting on the bench, looks over his shoulders into the crowd towards my mom, and my mom does this. You know what the coach did? He kept me in the game, and I didn't foul out. So that was the success, the only success of my sixth grade basketball career was that I finished a complete game and I did not foul out somehow. So then I get into high school, and you can imagine that my legacy of basketball continues. So freshman year, I didn't go out. I didn't go out for the team because I was intimidated. So not that I was only the youngest in my class, but I was the youngest boy in the high school when I was a freshman. There was no way like I was going to play with sophomores or juniors to try to play on a JV team. There was no way. So I didn't do it. So sophomore year, I'm like, you know what? I'm not the youngest anymore. There's these bunch of freshmen that came in. The freshmen don't know anything. I'm going to play. And so I played, and I only remember one game. And so remember, I'm still the youngest in my class, the smallest, the shortest. And so I was the kid that sat at the very end of the bench. And so I would only get into the game if we won by 20 points or if we lost by 20 points. And so I would be so frustrated when our team would win by 5 or we would lose by 5. I'm like, guys, we lost by 5. Can't we, like, it's the same as losing by 20. It's a loss. Like, it doesn't matter. The difference is when we get the closer to 20, the more farther the coach looks down to the bench. And when we're losing by 20, Courtney, you're in, and I go in, and then I'm kind of freaked out a little bit. I do remember one game during my sophomore year. He must have been upset with the starters, and it was the first quarter. And so, like, my mind, like, is not even in the game. Like, I'm not a first quarter guy. I wasn't a second quarter guy. I wasn't a third quarter guy. I was the fourth quarter, 90 seconds, 2 minutes left in the game guy. So first quarter, he must have been mad at the starters or something. But he's like, Courtney, you're in. And you can imagine me, like, I'm not even mentally there. And I just remember I get out onto the court, and I'm doing this. And the speed of the game was different in the beginning than at the end when all of the people from the ends of the benches. And it was, I was like this for 15 seconds, then immediately I was out of the game. And I'm like, there is no way Courtney is coming back into the first quarter ever again. Like, I was not his answer to whatever the starter's problem was that day. It wasn't me. But I remember one game that got in at the end of the game, and I was open near the baseline, and I'm not a great shooter from the baseline because I don't have the backboard to help me. All I remember is getting the pass. I'm like 10 feet away, and I'm like, Evan, this is like, you don't get the ball very often. Like, this is your chance. I remember shooting it, and it swished into the net, and that was my the highest points I'd ever gotten in that entire season. And actually, it was 2 points, and actually, that was the most points I scored in my entire high school career, was 2 points. Because what happened was, next year as a junior, we got a new coach. And the new coach came in and thought he was going to whip things into shape, and he was going to do tryouts at our school now. This was a school of 200. So he said we needed to have tryouts because there was too many guys at practice. Like, there was just too many in the practice gym practicing, and we just couldn't practice with 12 guys. We could only practice with 10. So he was going to cut 2 people. And so I go through all of the practices, and we get to the final day of when he's going to select his top 10. And so he set up this scrimmage. And while you guys are scrimmaging, I'm going to have the assistant coach come up to whoever needs to talk to me in the locker room, come up, tap you on the shoulder. You come down and talk to the locker room, and let you know that you didn't make it. So we're playing the scrimmage. And so I'm like, I'm sweating. I'm nervous. I'm like, just don't pass the ball to me. Like, I don't want to lose the ball. I'm not looking at the assistant coaches. Like, I don't want to make eye contact with them. I'm hiding behind taller people. I want them to think I'm not even here that day. That way they couldn't cut me. And so all towards the end of scrimmage, I thought I had made it. And all of a sudden I got a tap on the shoulder, and he's like, hey, coach wants to see you. I'm like, I'm sure he does. So, I remember going down in the locker room, sitting across from coach. He's like, hey, Courtney, sorry you didn't make the team. And I just thought in my head, like, I just want to wear the uniform. Like, I don't have to play. Like, I was thinking in my mind of pleading him, like, dude, I will be one of those guys that has the rag that when there's sweat behind the hoop, like, they run out. Whatever. I just wanted to be on the team. And so I remember, I'm like, okay, so I go to my locker, get my bag, and I remember taking the walk of shame, which was the 4 or 5 steps out of the locker room, across the basketball court, you know, across the baseline where everybody that's on the team is still practicing, and walking out and calling my mom and going home, which was it was like a day of defeat. Like, as a 15-year-old, I was like, how am I going to go to school tomorrow, and people are going to say, hey, there's 2 people that didn't make the team, and Evan's one of them. So it was like a real failure. It was a hard junior year of high school for me because of that. And then so I thought, okay, I've got extra time on my hands. I'm going to get a job. And so I started working at retail at one of the malls in Springfield, Illinois. And so about a month after that, I got a phone call from my boss saying, you've been fired. And I'm like, why have I been fired? And they had said, well, because of theft. I'm like, because of theft, yeah, we think that you're taking money out of the register. I'm like, I'm not taking money out of, like, I'm 15, like, or I was 16 at that time. I'm like, I don't even, like, I wouldn't even know how to do that. Like, I would be so scared to death. I don't know what that looks like. And like, yeah, sorry, we've just been seeing records that the drawer's coming up short. And so I get fired from my first job. And so I'm like, what is going on? And so I just kind of felt this shame, this, you know, really defeat, this failure. And so in both of these situations, I begin to, like, figure out, like, who am I? What's going on? And replaying the scenarios over and over and over in my head of, like, thinking, like, what could I do differently to stay on the ball team next time? Like, what could I do? Do I need different DNA? Did I need different parents? You know, and even the job, I'm like, what do I need to do? So have you ever, like, had failure and then, like, you're replaying it in your head? And that's what I was doing. I was just like, what does that, how can I not do this? How could I stop this in the future? And so I'm sure many of you guys have gone through some kind of defeat or failure in the past, or maybe you're staring at failure or defeat right now, maybe a loss of job, a loss of a relationship, maybe a divorce, a failed business, maybe a bankruptcy, not able to pay bills, or just a family relationship, or maybe you were in school and you're having a hard time in your grades, and you had a hard time last year and you're nervous about going this next year because some classes you're not doing well with. And so these lead to, this time, they lead to discouragement, empathy, you know, fear, thinking you're going to fail again. And sometimes we bring these things on ourselves. Like, there was nobody to blame for me getting cut off the basketball team, right? Like, Evan, you need to practice on your own. I didn't practice on my own. I just showed up, right? There's some things like we can do on our own, but sometimes defeat's just kind of given to us based on other people. But then sometimes it's based on us disobeying God, and because of that, we fail or defeat comes on us. There's a couple guys and individuals that have failed over time that you may know of. Here's the first one is Steve. Steve Jobs, did you know the first company that he started, he was fired from? I don't know how that works. About to start a company and then you get fired from it. This next one, Abraham Lincoln failed at business, and then he made a presidential run that he failed at. And the next one, Walt Disney. He worked at a newspaper and he was fired. Does anybody know the reason why he was fired? They said he was not creative enough. Next one is Jim Carrey was booed off of a stage the first time he ever did stand-up because he wasn't funny enough. And then the next one, Colonel Sanders. So Colonel Sanders came up with his recipe of herbs and spices, comes up with this, and then he goes business to business trying to sell this chicken, and over 1,000 businesses rejected him and his chicken. And then the next one is Evan Courtney. Can you pick which one I am? Number 20 on the far end, the guy that's usually in the front of the pictures are on the end. And then he cut from my high school basketball team. And then this next person cut from his high school basketball team. So I'm in good company, I guess, right? So Michael Jordan obviously cut from his basketball team also. But he has a lot more failures than I do with basketball. And we're going to listen to a little bit of them.
I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life. And that is why I succeed.
The greatest basketball player in the world ever, right? The next one, so we got King David. King David slept with somebody else's spouse, and then he killed, had that person murdered, had her husband murdered. The next individual, and this is Apostle Peter. So Peter, one of those that hung out with Jesus and said, Jesus, I'm going to fight for you till the end until you get arrested. And a girl comes up to me and asks, weren't you hanging out with Jesus? And then I'm going to tell her no. So that was his failures, telling people no and denying Christ three times. And then the next one is here's Moses. And so Moses was a guy that murdered another Egyptian and kind of failed in taking on that. And then the last one is this is the nation of Israel. So God's chosen people, and this being Joshua, and they failed in this defeat of I because of their own disobedience towards God and making poor decisions. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Joshua and the nation of Israel. And I would just wanted you to know today, wherever you are in life and maybe the failure or defeat that you're currently going through or that you have or that you are going to face, we are going to have, all of us have failure at some time or defeat, that you're not alone in experiencing that. Check this first one out. But here's the game-changing moment. Every time we have defeated failures, how we deal with losing will determine our future. So when it happens, because it is going to happen, how you deal with losing, how you deal with defeat, how you deal with failing will determine our future. And so it's a game-changing moment. And so you can either spiral in that defeat and continue to go down, or you can use it as a springboard into victory. And so the choice is yours. So every time you experience failure, defeat, divorce, bankruptcy, lose a job, have a broken relationship, you're in a game-changing moment of your life, and it's being handed to you, and the ball is being handed to you, and you have to make the decision of how you are going to deal with it. And so in today's story, we've got God's chosen people, Israel, and we're going to read about how they dealt with defeat. And so they experienced defeat because of poor decision-making and because they disobeyed God. So Joshua is this mighty conqueror, and he's experienced his defeat. And so I want to give you real quick a little bit of backstory on what this story looks like and where this kind of all puts into the history of the Bible.
The book of Joshua. Let's back up and remember the story so far. So God chose Abraham, and then his family became the people of Israel, who are then enslaved down in Egypt. And so through Moses, God rescued Israel out of Egypt. He made a covenant with them at Mount Sinai, and he brought them through the wilderness. So Israel then camped outside the promised land, and Moses called them to obey God's commands so that they could show all the other nations what God is like. The book of Joshua picks up right after Moses has died, and Israel's ready to enter the land. So the story of Joshua is designed with four main movements. Joshua first leads Israel into the promised land, and then once they're there, they meet all this hostility from the Canaanites, and so they engage them in battle. Then after their victories, Joshua divides up the promised land as the inheritance for the 12 tribes, and then the book concludes with these final speeches that Joshua gives to the people, which leads to the next section. We find stories about all these conflicts that Israel had with different Canaanite groups. And the first part retells the story of two battles in detail, and that's followed by a series of short stories that condense years of battles into a few brief summaries. So the first two battles are against Jericho and then Ai, and they offer these contrasting portraits of God's faithfulness versus Israel's failure. At Jericho, Israel is to take a completely passive approach. So they let God's presence in the ark lead them around the city to music for 6 days. And just like Rahab turned to the God of Israel, maybe the people of Jericho would do the same, but they don't. And so on the 7th day, the priests blow the trumpets and the walls come falling down, leading Israel to victory. The point of the story is that God is the one who will deliver his people. Israel simply needs to trust and wait. Now, the next story of the battle at Ai makes the opposite point. So there's this Israelite named Achan, and he steals from Jericho some of the devoted goods that were to belong to God alone, and then he lies about it. It's a pretty lame move after all that God has done for Israel. And so Israel goes into battle with the city of Ai, and they're totally defeated. And it's only after humble repentance and severely dealing with Achan's sin that Israel gains victory. And so together, these two stories, they're placed right up front to make an important point. If Israel is going to inherit the land, they have to be obedient and trust in God's commands. They don't get special treatment.
All right, so in chapter 6, they defeated Jericho. They went in, and God told them to plunder everything that you could, get all the gold and silver and bring that back, and we'll use that for the Ark of the Covenant, and keep nothing for yourself. And so they had successful victory. So in chapter 7, the Israelites target this next village of Ai, and through poor decision-making and the sin of Achan, they are defeated. And so what happens is they experienced, really this low morale. because they thought it was very easy for them to take Jericho, and so they go on to this next battle, and they're defeated, and they're broken, they're lost, their morale's lowered, they experience this death. And so because of his sin, of these taking these personal items, is discovered, Israel's having to deal with the issue of why they lost these battles. And so Joshua, their leader here, is broken. And he's frustrated, and he's at a pivotal game-changing point. He's having to make a decision of, what do we do now that we've been defeated? What does this look like? We've experienced failure. We lost. What's our next steps that we need to take to determine to be able to be a winner? And so when we make mistakes, when we feel defeated, that's what we have to do, is say, God, what is it? Like, what do I need to change? What are the next steps that I need to take? And so that's where Joshua was. He didn't want to, you know, a lot of times we can throw a pity party, or we can throw the towel on the ground and say, you know what, I quit. But Joshua's like, this is a game-changing moment. We've been defeated. Now how do I continue to move and do what God wants us to do? I think it was last summer, we were on vacation, and so I tried to find this audiobook to listen to while we were driving for hours. And I found this book called The 5-Second Rule. Now, the book isn't about how long you can keep and what certain foods can fall on the ground and you got 5 seconds to pick it up, and it's like sucker or pork chop. It wasn't that sort of thing, but the book was about this lady that was experiencing depression in her life, was having a hard time with family relationships, was having a hard time financially, and she felt like she was having a hard time getting out of bed in the morning. And so as she's laying in bed and she can't get out of bed, and it's going on for days or weeks, and she sees on TV or she reads somewhere, but she learns about NASA and their launch system of when they launch rockets, and it kind of sparks inside her. If she sees this or she's reading about it, is where they do the countdown and they get ready to launch the rocket, and they always do, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and the rocket launches. And as she's kind of learning about this, like, she knew it before, but she's like seeing this, she's like, hey, that's it. Like, that's what I need to do to help me get out of the bed. Like, for me to get out of the bed, of the defeat that I'm in, to be able to step out of the bed and stand up, I need a launch system. And she's just like, okay, I'm just going to get out of bed in 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then she would hop out of bed. She's like, okay, I'm out of bed now. I need to get dressed. I don't want to get dressed. Like, I don't want to go out to the world again. I'm failing in money. I'm failing in my marriage. I'm failing with my kids. I need to get dressed. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then she would get dressed. And so I remember kind of listening to this book, going through this book. And I thought, man, that's like really like genius. There's nothing biblical about that or immoral about that. But so I started to try it. Like, so I would get to work and I'm like, hey, I've got to call some such and such, and I don't want to make that phone call. So I'm like, dude, you just need to make the phone call. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Pick up the phone and call. Or I'd be on the golf course and I'd be nervous about my shot and not knowing, you know, there's so many mental things when you're getting ready to swing the club. I'm like, Evan, just do it. 5, 4, 3. And I started kind of doing it throughout my life, of just things that I didn't know how to start. Like, I would just count down. And so, not that Joshua was doing this, but I could see, like, this could be something for him. Like, he's like, okay, like, we got defeated at Ai. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, let's pick up and go. We've got to keep moving forward. And so when we experience failure, we've got to be willing to seek God, deal with the problem, whether that's sin or something else. We made bad decisions, and we've got to live the way that God wants us to. Look at this. It's failure. Oh, the next one. Failure could be the back door to success. Your failure, your defeat, could be that back door to success. It could be just one of the ways that it leads you to success. It doesn't mean the failure is the end of it. Failure could be the beginning of it. You know, the failure of me in high school of not making basketball could have sparked me to practice harder. It didn't, but it could have. You know, for Jordan, the other guy that got cut from high school, that spurred something inside of him, put this chip on his shoulder for the rest of his life. And so your failure could be the back door to your success. So you being bankrupt could create something inside of you. Say, I'm not going down that route again, and here's what I'm going to do because of that. I'm not getting divorced again, and here's what I'm doing because of that. I'm not losing my relationship with my child again, and here's what I'm going to do. Failure could be the back door to success. So the Israelites had success in chapter 6 in Jericho. So they went in, they destroyed But because of the sin and them disobeying God, their next battle they experience defeat. So look at Joshua 6:7. It picks up and it says, here's what happened after they experienced defeat. Joshua and the elders of Israel tore their clothing in dismay. They threw dust on their heads and bowed their face down to the ground before the ark of the Lord until evening. Continues on in verse 10. But the Lord said to Joshua, get up. Why are you lying on your face like this? Israel has sinned and broken my covenant. They have stolen some of the things that I commanded must be set apart to me. And so what Joshua does is a game-changing moment. He gets up, he repents, and then he deals with the issue at hand. So he goes on and he deals with Achan. He deals with him. And so they deal with him in a way that they dealt with him during that time in that culture in the Old Testament. I probably, if you had an issue with somebody today, I wouldn't deal with them the way that they dealt with Achan. Okay? So how they dealt with him was they discovered that it was him. So they took him out into the middle. People lined around him. They took stones. They threw stones at him until he died. And then they covered his body with stones. I wouldn't recommend that for today if you have a problem with somebody. But that's how they dealt with it. And so today I want to talk a little bit about, like, how can we, there was a game-changing moment. So the game-changing moment is, how can we turn a defeat into a victory? And the first way is that God never forgets about you. So God never forgets about you. God never, it doesn't matter what failure, God never forgets about you. Joshua 8:1, look at this. So he repents, he makes the game-changing moment, and then this is what God says. Do not be afraid or discouraged. Do not be afraid. So when you fail in life, work, family, the enemy is going to whisper something in your ear, and it sounds something similar to this. You're a screw-up. Nobody cares about you. You're just going to do it again. They don't believe you. They don't trust you. You're just going to continue to fail and fail and fail. And so that's what you're being whispered. And so God here is telling Joshua, do not be afraid or discouraged. And so this is God speaking to him in a changing moment of where he needed him. Now he repented, he dealt with the sin, and now God was saying, do not be afraid, do not be discouraged. So today, if you're in the midst of that defeat, ask God, God, what is it? What do I need to change? Change it. And then I believe God is saying, do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Because when you fail, God is not done with you. He's not done. He wants to pick you up, dust you off, and do what? Do not be afraid or discouraged. The second way is that God wants to turn our defeats into victory is don't make the same mistakes. So don't make the same mistakes. You know, learn from them. Use the mistakes to make you stronger. And so this is in the case of Joshua. So continue in Joshua 8:1. Do not be afraid or discouraged. And then God gives him this plan and telling him, don't make the same mistake. He says, take all of your fighting men. And so before, the problem was these guys, when they went and attacked Ai the first time, they got really arrogant. There was probably an arrogance to them. There was probably some frustration to them. And the reason why is when they went into Jericho, so they marched around 6 times. They blew the horn on the 7th day. You know, it crashes in. All these guys run in and gather the gold and the silver, and they plunder Jericho. And all of those items for their hard work went where? It went to God. And so these guys, the next village that they're supposed to go in and attack, and they're feeling this sort of this, what I think is the frustration of, God, like, you're wanting us to take this next town. We're going to go in. We're going to fight. It's going to be a lot of hard work, and we're not getting anything out of it. Like, last time, you had us do, you know, we went in, did the hard work, and you got everything. And so these guys are probably feeling a little bit of that, or like, I'm just going to hang back at the camp. I'm not going to go do it. And then I think the other side of them probably was looking at the size of this village. It wasn't as big as Jericho, and so they're like, we don't need to send 30,000. Like, we can just send 3,000 guys. And so here, God is telling them, do not make the same mistakes twice. And he's telling them that by him saying, do not be afraid or discouraged. Take all of your fighting men. So he's saying, don't make the same mistakes twice. The first battle, you didn't send enough men because you were lazy. This time, send them all. When we fail, it is typically because not of just one thing, but because of multiple things. And that's what Joshua was dealing with. He was dealing with that, the sin, the disobedience, and they didn't send enough guys. So don't make the same mistakes. Learn from them. You know, when I think about the guys that are playing basketball, what do they do? Immediately after the game, they go into the locker room. They don't celebrate that long, and they begin to watch the film of the last game because they want to learn from their mistakes. I read an article last year about this basketball player that didn't shoot well during the season. So he went to the coach and said, "Coach, I want every video clip of every single shot I took last year because I want to watch it and review it to know where I need to get better, where not to take shots, where I do need to take shots." And so we've got to figure out not to make the same mistakes twice. Look at Proverbs 26:11. It's a pretty grotesque verse. As a dog returns to its vomit, so a fool repeats his foolishness. So just as a dog throws up and then instantly goes to that throw up, so is the same way if we continue to make our same mistakes. So if you want to turn a defeat into victory, you can't make the same mistakes. So if you want to bake a vanilla cake, you can't keep putting ingredients in for a chocolate cake. You've got to change. You can't keep making the same mistakes. The other way to turn your defeat into victory is we have to go back to the place of an earlier defeat. So you're going to have to go back into that place of the earlier defeat. So Joshua here, Joshua 8, 1 and 2. So it says, "Then the Lord said to Joshua, you know, do not be afraid to discourage. Take all your fighting men, for I have given you the king of Ai, his people, his town, and his land. You will destroy them as you destroyed Jericho and its king, but this time you may keep the plunder and livestock yourselves and set an ambush behind the town." And so what they're having to do is going back to a place of earlier defeat, that they're going to have to walk back into that place that they had had this failure. So when I was cut from basketball, what did I have to do? I had to go back into that gym. Like, I had to go back in and see that, like, during the season. Like, I was in high school. Like, I had to go to the games. I had to walk back into the gym. I had to walk back onto court and sit across from where that team was and stare at the earlier defeat. Now, the only good thing was the basketball players sat on this side, the high schoolers sat on that side, and that's where the cheerleaders were. So, luckily, I sat over there where the cheerleaders were, but you have to go back to a place of an earlier defeat. If you got divorced and you had kids, guess what? You're having to have a relationship with that person that you had a divorce with as you're trying to figure things out with kids. If you got bankrupt, guess what? You're going to have to walk into a bank again. If you got fired from a job, you're going to have to get another job, right? So you're going to have to go back to a place of earlier defeat. And so that's what Joshua and these guys were doing. They had to go back to Ai. God was sending them back to a place where they had felt defeat before. And so Ai was a reminder of their defeat. And they had to look Ai in the face. Because when we recover ground, sometimes it's very painful. And so that's what they were doing. In your own life, you're going to have to go back and stare defeat in the face and say, okay, how can I change this? Look at Joshua 8:3. So Joshua, what did he do? All of his fighting men sent out to attack Ai. So God gives them this plan. And he lays out this plan for them of how he wants to attack them. And it said a little bit, he wants them to set this ambush up for him. Look at this, Romans 8:28. And so when we make mistakes, here's what God does. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and who are called according to his purpose for them. So God here is kind of shaping and giving them a plan, and he's taking past failures and he's turning it into successes. And so these guys had fear and anxiety, and it gripped their hearts, and they didn't want to go back to the place where their friends were killed. And so what happens in Ai, and God gives us this amazing plan. So before, these guys, when they attacked Ai, they sent 3,000 people at Ai. Ai came out, they saw them, overturned them, and they ran all of the Israelites back and killed some of their men. So this time, the plan was very similar. God's like, okay, send those same amount of people out. Ai will think that's all that you have. They will come out to get them. Meanwhile, we've got more people hidden behind them, and I wanted to set you people up in the west, so a different direction. So when all the men of Ai came out, they thought that's all that they were fighting of the Israels with this small hand of people again. All of a sudden, these guys on the side came into the village. They started to burn the village. These guys from Ai that came out looked back, saw their village burning, And all of a sudden, the morale dropped of like, what am I fighting for? My home's gone. My family's gone. All of a sudden, they look forward and they see more of the army of Israel come at them. And so God gave them this plan that he works together all the things for good. And so the failure of Ai was a backdoor to success. They might have not have had success at Ai without this plan that God gave them, without this failure. So you may have failures in your life right now that you may not have, you may not get success unless you had those failures. The last one is to turn defeats into failures. You have to remember where your victory came from. So the last thing that Joshua does, Joshua 8:30, is this. Then Joshua built an ark to the Lord, the God of Israel, on the Mount of Ebal. And so it continues on. It talks about Joshua. He took his men for over 30 miles, and they read the word. Joshua then read to them all the blessings and the curses of Moses had written into the book of the instruction. So these guys gathered together, and what did they do? They thanked God. They didn't celebrate with a picnic. They didn't have a banquet. They didn't have a feast. They didn't have a parade. They didn't blow trumpets, horns. What did they do? They got together, and they said, okay, God, we thank you so much that you've done this for us. And that's what we have to do. If we want to turn a defeat into a victory, we've got to thank God. God, you're the one that did this. You're the one that gave us this victory. I know it's you gave me the skills. You gave me the knowledge. Like, it's all God has led us to the victory. It's all his. So whatever defeats you're in today, know that, try to figure out, why are you experiencing this? Maybe you're experiencing loss. Is there something that you've done? Maybe there's sin in your life, or maybe poor decision making. Know this, that God is in control, that God doesn't forget about you. He doesn't want you to make the same mistakes. He's got a plan. He's got a purpose for you, and he wants you to celebrate him. You could be at a game-changing moment right now that's either going to lead to more defeat or it's going to springboard you towards victory. And so back to when I remember when I got cut from that team my junior year. I got fired from that job, and I thought, what am I going to do now? Like, I still wanted to play basketball, but I knew that, like, in the school, high school, it wasn't ever going to happen. And so there was a local church in town that started this basketball league out of the blue. Now, it wasn't a basketball league for churches to play other churches. It was just for the community, and you had to be in high school and older to be able to play in this basketball league. And so I remember, like, hey, this is, like, my opportunity. The competition is different. The buildup of people are different. I am one of the youngest signing up, but in that category, when you're playing against 30, 40s, and 50-year-olds, like, that's more of an advantage. Like, those guys, the amount of braces and pads that those guys had on, and I showed up as this, you know, 16-year-old kid that could run, like, it was like I was in my element. And all of a sudden, I remember playing, like, one game I scored 30 points. Like, who goes from getting cut from a high school team to be able to score 30 points? Now, it was against guys in their 40s and 50s, but it was success for me. And so I remember what happened is they would do multiple games on one night, and then in between the games, there would be a pastor that would come out and do a devotion. And then the next week, same thing. All these teams would play, they come out and do a devotion. And so I hadn't been going to church. I wasn't a Christian. All of a sudden, I started hearing these devotions. I was going to play basketball. I wasn't going to hang out with God. I was going to play basketball. Heard these devotions, started going to the church, and I landed in a room similar to this where a guy was up on stage that I barely knew, and he said, is there anybody in here that wants to know more about God in their life? I remember as a teenager in the back, I had my arms crossed, everybody closed their eyes, and he's like, who wants more God in their life? And I don't know what was inside of me. Now I knew that it was God, but I was like, that was me. And I stood up and I walked to the front and I said, God, I want to have a real relationship with you. And so that would not have happened if I didn't have this failure. But I had to look at the defeat in the eye. I had to pick up the ball again and I had to move forward. And so I wouldn't be here. I don't know if I would be here in this particular place if it wasn't for that failure, for me becoming and having a real relationship with Jesus when I was a junior in high school. Imagine us as a church, if all of us, when we experience defeat, that we're able to grab that ball and we can say, you know what, I'm going to use this as a springboard towards victory. Imagine how our church would change. Imagine how our community would change when we experience defeat, if we're able to grab that and change it into a victory. If we're able to repent, if we're able to change something in our life, if we're able to celebrate God, imagine how our communities could change. Imagine how Mattoon and Charleston and Arcola and Neoga and Tuscola, how these communities would change when we grab defeat and we turn them into victories. And then the last one is this. I realize there's probably some of you in this room today that were at the part that I was of not having a real relationship with God. And maybe that's your game-changing moment is today. Because there's a God in heaven that loves you and he cares about you. And the Bible tells us that when we disobey God, that we're separated from God. And that we don't have a relationship with God when we disobey and we go against what he calls us to. And so you're feeling that internally today. And what happens is if we die and we're separated from God here, we're separated from God for eternity. And so God saw this and he saw it was a problem. And so he sent his son Jesus to come live on the earth and to live a perfect life for us. And he died on the cross for us. And the Bible tells us that when we ask Jesus, we recognize that Jesus died for us. And we ask him into our life and we ask him to forgive us of the ways that we've disobeyed him. God says that while we were sinners, he died for us. While we were going against him, he still died for us because he loved us. And that if we confess to him and tell him, God, I've gone the wrong way, I want to follow you, that we will be with God forever. And if you need to make that decision today, you can just say a simple prayer of where you are. I'm going to pray, and you can pray the same thing at your seat and to ask him into your life to have a real relationship. Let's pray together. God, today I recognize that I've not been following after you, that I've been going against what you've wanted me to, and there's things in my life that I'm disobeying. Help me to follow you. Today I want to have a real relationship with you. Forgive me, change me, help me not to make the same mistakes. I believe that you came on this earth to be able to change my life, and I accept your love, and I accept that you forgive me. Thank you so much for sending your son to this earth for me. In your name, amen.